American Novels. A Tale of the Sea. A pioneer of genuine sea stories. A novel of adventure that met with such unlooked-for success that sea tales came into vogue as a consequence. The NBC University of the Air presents an adaptation of James Fenimore Cooper's novel, The Pilot. Another in the series of books that live, American Novels. It is soon after the events of the American Revolution have involved the kingdoms of France and Spain and the Republic of Holland in our quarrel. Round a point of land that forms one of the sides of a little bay on the northeastern coast of England, an American frigate and schooner ease their way to a point of anchor amid the sandbars and sunken rocks with which the coast abounds. From the schooner, a small boat conveys its commander to the side of the frigate, and when he climbs to her deck, he is greeted by the young first officer of the heavily armed vessel.
Well, Captain Barnstable, in answering our hail to come aboard the frigate, you are prompt, as usual.
Tell me, Mr. Griffith, what kind of game is this we're playing? Is the old man mad? Does he think the bottoms of the schooner Ariel and this frigate are made of iron and that a rock can't knock a hole in them?
Captain Munson ably commands this frigate, Barnstable, and he knows your prudence too well to fear the wreck of your vessel.
But why sail we to this treacherous position? I thought our mission was to go ashore at a less dangerous point and capture a few prominent British royalists that we may use them in exchange for American prisoners.
That is our mission, and this is our first important step toward its accomplishment. Before our goal may be pursued further, we must pick up our pilot.
Ah, yes, our pilot. The mysterious gentleman signals from shore and we race in answer to his call. Perhaps into the very muscles of shore batteries.
Oh, we fly the British flag from our peaks.
This is droll navigation indeed. First, we run into this unfrequented bay that is full of rocks and sandbars, and then we get off our pilot.
You get off our pilot.
I?
With the assistance of Mr. Merry and Long Tom Corfin, you were to go with them in the whaleboat to the beach.
And how am I to know this pilot?
Well, he is a small man who will be garbed in a drab pea jacket. And when you find him, you are to ask what water we have in this bay. If in his reply he speaks the word confidence, he is our pilot.
It is a child's game I am to play, Griffith, a game of cat and mouse.
Then play it well, Barnstable, lest ye be the mouse. Long Tom Coffin, Mr. Merry, make ready the whaleboat.
Aye, aye, sir.
I suppose that's your way of telling me to be on my way, Mr. Griffith.
It is. Well, there's not much of daylight left. From the looks of the sky, it's fair to be a stormy night.
Yes.
If you meet with difficulties ashore, show 3 oar blades in a row. Yes, 3 oars on end and a pistol will draw a shot from the frigate.
On our own heads, no doubt. A long shot makes a great smoke and some noise, Mr. Griffith. But it's a terrible, uncertain manner of throwing old iron about.
Then let's hope its tossing will be unnecessary, eh?
Whaleboat ready, Mr. Griffith.
Whaleboat ready, Captain Barnstable?
I heard.
I'll go now to the beach. Be prompt, be cautious, and above all, be successful. For the sake of our mission, Barnstable, bring back our pilot.
Beach, he called this. Hear me, Mr. Merry, Long Tom. Beach, Mr. Griffith called this perpendicular mountain of rock and sand and brush.
A bad place to be should we happen to fall in with enemies.
It is that indeed, Mr. Coffin.
Where are we to find this pilot, sir?
The answer to that is as little known to me as to you, Mr. Merry. And so the answer to the question of whether or not the unknown man will betray us.
The pilot has the confidence of Captain Munson.
Oh, has he now, Mr. Merry? What a pleasant thing for the pilot.
Hey, look, someone comes this way.
And he's small. But I should hardly call that wrapping a pea jacket. Stand you here, men, while I go ahead. Sir, a question, please. What water have we in this bay?
The usual kind, sir. Wet.
How would you like it, stranger, to be brought aboard my ship a prisoner, that I may fully enjoy the benefit of your wit? Hear ye, stranger, you are merry out of season. I'll not be laughed at by a stripling who has not the strength to carry a beard if he had one.
Oh, Barnstable, dear Barnstable, would you harm me?
Why, is deceive me or...
Turn me to the light. Catherine. Catherine Plowden.
The very same Catherine Plowden you last saw in Carolina. Only 12 long, long months older.
Catherine, I knew you were somewhere in England.
And, well, you should. For it was you who drove us here, my cousin Cecilia and I, with the dread of becoming uncle to those he calls rebels and traitors that prompted Colonel Howard to flee from Carolina with us, his nieces.
And that other loyal subject of the throne, young Christopher Dillon?
We're all at St. Ruth's Abbey.
So close to here?
Yes.
How amazing this is, Catherine. Of all the places in England where orders may have directed me, I come to this tiny bit of its shores in search of our pilot and find you.
Oh, but it was I who found you, Barnstable. And mine have not been the only eyes to sight the frigate and the aerial. Your danger is great.
Ah, but well worth the running for this precious moment, darling.
But more precious moments are the moments that sometime hence, when Cecilia and I are rescued from the loneliness of St. Ruth's, we...
Shh!
Barnstable?
Hold, Catherine. A stroller walks this way. Short man in a drab pea jacket. I say, my good man, what water have we in this bay?
Enough to take all out in safety who have entered in confidence.
There by the hedge are two of my crew. They will take you to the whaleboat where I will join you in a moment or two. I believe I can prevail on another hand to go off with us.
Time matters more now than any number of hands. The consequences of delay must fall on those who cause it.
I will meet the consequences with those who have a right to inquire into my conduct, sir. My men await you.
Is that your pilot, Barnstable?
My pilot, Catherine, or a king? His manner makes it difficult to determine.
Is he to report to John Paul Jones?
John Paul Jones? What idiocy is this?
I've heard word that John Paul Jones may be aboard one of your ships.
What you heard is nonsense, then.
Oh, it is of no matter, Barnstable. What is that with our hearts back in America, Cecilia and I are little less than prisoners at St. Ruth's.
You said a moment or two, Captain, or an hour or two.
He is a king, no doubt.
You'd best go, Barnstable.
No.
Yes, Barnstable, because I ask it. Go now, but come for us soon. You'll find us willing captives, Cecilia and I, if Griffith and yourself are our captors.
And you'll never believe what occurred on that shore, Mr. Griffith. I saw this person walking toward
me. Captain Barnstable, return to the schooner Ariel and get underway at once.
And just who is to justify to Captain Munson my moving without orders?
You'll get underway at once, Captain. A nor'easter bruise as any man who's been to sea can tell. 2 hours hence, a heavy swell will break where these vessels now ride so quietly.
The Ariel sails upon the word from Captain Munson only.
Then go aboard her, Captain, and make sail.
Captain Munson?
You will respect the pilot's word as my word, Barnstable. Get the Ariel underway and stay within hail of us.
Aye, sir.
A small boat from the Ariel awaits you. Come, I'll see you on your way.
Now then, Mr. Griffith.
Beware, pilot, how you trifle with us ignorantly. It's a dangerous experiment to play at hazards with an enemy.
You know not what you threaten. Nor whom, Mr. Griffith?
Oh, I know what I threaten, Mr. Pilot. As for whom, that shall be determined as you discharge your duty.
All canvas is furled, but the three topsails, Mr. Pilot... And we appear to hold our course well.
About here, we're getting into the real danger. We must hold this channel or run aground, Captain Munson. Order the lead line out, Mr. Griffith, and get me the right water.
Heave away that lead line, Mr. Coffin.
And fall a good depth, Long Tom. 8 or 10.
4 and 7.
7. 'Tis well enough. But now is the time to watch her closely.
Again, Long Tom. Heave away that lead.
And a half. 5.5 fathoms.
She'll run aground.
If the next is a lower fall, give the order to tack immediately, Mr. Griffith.
And a half. 4.
Helm to leeward. Hard.
Breakers! Breakers! Head ahead!
If she responds to a helm, we'll clear.
Breakers! Head ahead!
We must be in the bite of the shoal. She won't respond now, but lose her way. We'll be scraping bottom in a moment.
An anchor might hold her, Mr. Griffith.
An anchor might, Captain Munson. Clear away the bow anchor!
No! No! Hold on, you men! Hey, to your station!
Who is it that dares countermand my orders?
He is our pilot, Mr. Griffith.
Then all is lost indeed.
Roll out the helm. Bring up the head yards against the wind. Mr. Corbin, heave your lead as we swing around and give me the right water. I'll pass the helm there, I say. Now.
5, 4.
She shows, Mr. Pilot.
Helm to the wind now. Hard. Slap, fella. Slap your broadside to the sea. Now, you seamen, give her both jib and mainsail.
All that canvas in such a tempest?
5 and 4! 4!
She shows, Mr. Pilot, and there's naught you can do about it.
Steady on the helm. She'll feel the shock of the wind in the main canvas. Hold her helm.
Look out! Oh, it's the jib blown from the boat rope.
Did I not say it was perilous to loosen all that canvas? The anchor, Mr. Pilot. It's our only chance.
Mr. Coffin, are you sleeping? Let me hear you.
5, 4.
The anchor, the anchor.
Where away the yard. In mainsail. Pay the up course now. Hold past the helm.
Deeper call. She may be swinging to the channels.
She is, Captain Munson, and into the sea beyond. What think you the next call from Long Tom, Mr. Griffith?
And a 5, or perhaps only 4.
To be nearer the call, you do best to add the 2 together.
5 and 4! 10!
There, Mr. Griffith. We are in safety now.
5 and 4! 15!
Silence, Mr. Coffin. You've established the worth of our pilot. The deeper you call now, only the deeper my chagrin.
There on the starboard oars, Long Tom, we head for the small inlet off the port bow.
Aye, sir.
The new Twilight thickens, Captain Barnstable.
As does the plot, Mr. Griffith.
Aye.
When we touch the enemy shore, we go off on the way to fulfill our part of the major mission, the obtaining of several individuals of character from the enemy.
At the meeting aboard the Ariel a while ago, the pilot leaned kindly to your suggestion that we two be assigned the task of capturing Colonel Howard and his unworthy associate, Christopher Dillon.
Why not? They make likely prey, do they not? Both are loyal subjects of the throne.
Tell me, how did you know they were at St. Ruth's Abbey?
Catherine Plowden told me.
What? Catherine?
I had no opportunity to tell you before, but I saw...
Where did you see her? When?
Last evening. Atop that cliff you called the beach.
Truthfully, Barnstable, you saw her. Was she alone?
You mean, was Cecilia with her, I suppose?
Yes,
no,
yes.
No, she wasn't, Griffith. But she is now, no doubt, or close by, for both are at St. Ruth's. Hold those oars, men.
Oh, I have lived in hopes that some lucky chance might throw Cecilia in my way. Well, we touched the enemy shore, Barnstable.
Then let us be on our way, Griffith. And pray that we may touch the friendly deck of the Ariel once more this night.
What are you doing at that window, Mr. Dillon?
I told you, Colonel Howard, I
Thought I heard some sort of commotion outside.
Nonsense. I heard none. Catherine heard none. Did you hear any, Captain Buttercliff?
I heard none, Colonel.
You hear, Mr. Dillon? Sit down, boy. The captain has the abbey well guarded against any attack by my rebellious and misguided countrymen.
But, Colonel, if that was a commotion I heard...
It wasn't, I'm sure, Mr. Dillon. Your nerves are on edge.
Your own are not what they should be, my dear Catherine, judging by the way you tug at that handkerchief.
Oh.
Ah, Cecilia, my dear, how beautiful you look. Here, sit here by me.
I'll be quite comfortable here by Cousin Catherine, Mr. Dillon.
Oh, yes, of course.
You really should sit by Mr. Dillon, Cecilia, or better still, by the military might of Captain Buncliffe. Little good I could do to protect you from the ruffians who caused the commotion Mr. Dillon thinks he heard.
Catherine, did they... I mean...
Yes? What do you mean, Cecilia?
I mean...
Well, come in. Yes, orderly?
I've been instructed to advise you, sir, that our sentinels are detaining two suspicious-looking men who by their dress appear to be seamen.
Oh, no.
Ah, silly talk, was it, Colonel Howard? Nonsense, eh? Did I say I heard a commotion outside, or did I not?
You said it, Mr. Dillon, and quite enough time.
Yes.
Orderly, send the men in here.
Very good, sir.
I beg to be excused, Uncle.
Now, Cecilia, there's no need for you to become unduly alarmed. These men won't harm you.
Perhaps Cecilia begs to be excused for another reason, Colonel Howard. Perhaps these men,
Here they are. You understand, of course, gentlemen, self-preservation requires of us that you be detained, but only to clear yourselves of any doubt on our part, which I'm sure you'll have no trouble doing.
I am not of that opinion, Colonel.
Did I ask if you were, Mr. Dillon? Seaman, you look to be, gentlemen. From whence came ye, pray, and whither are ye bound?
From Sunderland last, bound overland to Whitehaven.
That voice. What have I heard that voice? Catalina, perhaps?
Why, he sounds just like Henry Fletcher.
Yes, doesn't he, Cecilia?
No, Catherine. No, Cecilia. You both know very well whom he sounds like, don't you? No doubt because he is a Mr. Griffith.
Griffith?
Yes.
Are you mad, Mr. Dillon? This unkempt, unshaven, slovenly-looking man. forgive me, sir. You take him to be Edward Griffith?
Yes.
And who be the other?
Regardless of whom they may be, Colonel Howard, I demand their further detention.
But we have no proof they're enemies.
I think it proper the men be detained.
Ah, Captain Buttercliffe adds his wise word to mine. Now, as to proof that they are enemies, Colonel... Just wait.
Where are you going, Mr. Dillon, that you climb into your wraps and spurs?
I ride to attend to some important business, Colonel Howard. And if what I believe is true, it would be some very important business indeed.
Hurry. Hurry, Cecilia, hurry.
If I hurry more, Catherine, the breeze will blow out the candle.
I trust the orderly won't suspect we've not given this key to Captain Buttercliffe, and that he truly believes the captain requested it.
Shh.
Here's the door. Griffith!
Cecilia, is that you?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my darling. After all these lonesome months since Carolina.
Where's my Barnstable?
Catherine.
Oh, there you are. Gallant gentleman who calls to release me from within these walls and instead becomes entrapped within them himself.
No, I...
Listen.
Aye, that is Mr. Christopher Dillon attending to his important business. He was certain of my identity and knew a ship of ours must be near at hand.
I think, Griffith, you hear the guns of the cutter Alacrity.
Cutter?
Yes, Mr. Dillon ordered it to this vicinity at the first report of American vessels sailing off our shores.
Griffith... We've got to get aboard the Ariel and give our boys a hand.
Getting aboard is no simple matter, Barnstable.
But we have to...
Nor is the more immediate task of escaping from here.
The door at the end of this corridor is unlocked, Griffith. And a thick hedge outside will conceal you from nearby sentinels and permit your escape.
I think not, Miss Plough.
Captain Buttercliffe.
In His Majesty's service, Mr. Griffith. I think it best we adjourn to the upper chamber. When Mr. Dillon returns from his duty well done, he will perhaps want to ask each of you a question or two before condemning you to a scaffold.
Yes, Mr. Dillon, you were right. This gentleman is the rebel Griffith.
And that one, the traitor Barnstable, as I also suspected.
And both in disguise, Mr. Dillon. I suppose you scoundrels know what that means, Griffith? This being war in which we're engaged.
We are well aware, Captain Barrowcliffe.
Mr. Dillon.
Yes?
Tell again the story of how the Alacrity saw to a task. Repeat in detail how the Ariel now comes to lie at the bottom of the sea.
As a matter of fact,
I enjoy watching the expressions of anguish which come to the faces of our doomed prisoners.
And I, Captain. Well, to begin with...
No, you don't, Mr. Griffith. Don't move another inch toward that door. I would dismiss the thought of escape from the Abbey if I were you. But the sound of this little whistle in my hand, 20 armed men would enter this room at once. Do I make myself clear, gentlemen? Now then, Mr. Dillon.
Yes.
Do you wish to continue the tale of the Alacrity's victory and the Ariel's defeat, or shall I...
Down with your arms, you islanders!
Oh?
Yield yourself to the power of the 13 republics.
Why, it's our pilot.
Yes. Huh.
And who is this man you call pilot? A Samson? That his single arm can change the face of things so suddenly? Down with your own weapon, masquerader. Or at the report of this pistol, your very body shall be made a target for another 20 bullets.
And thine for 100, Captain. Without there.
Aye, sir.
Enter. And let this confident gentleman feel his weakness.
Aye, aye, sir. It's the crew of our frigate.
By what authority, sir, is it that you dare thus to invade the castle of a subject of this realm?
I bear no authority from any quarter, but rank only an humble follower of the Friends of America. Having permitted Mr. Griffith and Captain Barnstable to enter into danger, I have thought it my duty to see them extricated.
Mr. Dillon.
Yes?
Did you not tell us that after the Ariel went down, the victorious Alacrity guarded these shores?
Well...
She did that, Captain. Right up to the moment our men boarded her and relieved her of that duty.
We've lost the Alacrity?
And we the Ariel. So I think it time now we brought the unhappy tidings of this day to a quick close. The dwellers of St. Ruth's will be escorted aboard the frigate at once, and our bow will be turned toward friendlier shores.
Ah, 'tis the long way we sail for home, Mr. Griffith. The rising sun shows our bow pointed to the Holland coast.
We drop our pilot there and then head for home, Barnstable.
Oh.
Strange vessel off the port stern.
Ah, look there, Mr. Griffith. She's an enemy and no doubt.
Aye.
Coming on like a racehorse.
Let the racehorse beware. He does not stumble over the cannon shot with which our men await the word to greet them.
Well, he's eager for the prey. He cannot wait to hail within striking distance to let loose his fire.
Are the ladies secure below?
Yes, yes, they are.
That's the way to talk to these rebels.
Colonel Howard, I'm afraid, sir, you will soon find this deck unpleasant and dangerous.
You know little of old George Howard, young man. If you think he would for thousands miss seeing that symbol of rebellion which flies above, leveled before the flag of his majesty. That's telling the rebels. Speak again and put these traitors in their place.
His majesty speaks with a loud mouth, Mr. Griffith. Is it not time to answer back?
I think it is, Barnstable.
It is not, Mr. Griffith.
Well, here's that strange pilot of yours who seems to hold the authority of a John Paul Jones.
Get below deck, Colonel Howard.
It's my pleasure, pilot, to remain and inhale the odor of loyalty that's wafted from yonder floating tower of the king. You rebels and traitors to the throne.
If it be your pleasure to remain on deck, Colonel, we will respect your pleasure. Mr. Griffith, give the order to fire.
Aye, sir.
Now, lads, let them have it. See what happens, you rebels. Submit to the clemency of the crown and yield to the royal mercy.
Spread our sails to close in, Mr. Griffith.
Let fall. Out with your booms. Hoist away of everything.
We'll be broadside to them in a moment, Mr. Griffith. And a scatter of grape shot should unreave their rigging.
Unreave their rigging, you say?
Ha!
Close in, Mr. Pilot. Closer. Perish, rebels. Perish, traitors. And sentence the severe judgment of his majesty.
Colonel Howard. Colonel Howard is down.
To your duty, Mr. Griffith.
Give them some grape shot, lads. Sprinkle them fair and drive them from the yard. We're closing, lads, to take her.
rest off the Holland coast, Mr. Pilot.
Very good, Mr. Griffith. The claws of that enemy lion were sharp and true before we trimmed them for him, eh?
Aye, sir.
But more damage he did to his own cause than ours. For his own blow felled a very strong friend in Colonel Howard, and his mere presence brought about the loss of another.
Christopher Dillon was a fool to attempt to escape by swimming to the enemy vessel under that terrible crossfire.
Whaleboat ready, Mr. Griffith.
Well, it is the time for parting, sir. I extend my hand to a faithful pilot and a very great seaman.
I accept your hand most graciously, Mr. Griffith. At times we did not see eye to eye. But though we traveled different roads, we headed toward the same destination. I truly regret the separation demanded by duty. But you will be quite content, I'm sure, in the company of another. One far more charming and personable than I. Farewell, sir.
Farewell, sir.
Edward.
Oh, Cecilia, my darling.
Oh, Edward.
And Catherine.
Does our pilot depart with no word of farewell?
When duty calls, Catherine, there is little time for social niceties.
What an utterly strange man he is, Edward.
Aye.
I've never known anyone quite like him.
Nor I, Cecilia. He is a man of consummate knowledge of his profession. A man of cool, deliberate, and even desperate courage.
But who is he? I cannot recall that I ever once heard his name.
He is just a man, Cecilia. Just a man who is ready to lay down his life for a cause in which he believes.
Well, there he goes. Must the pilot report now to John Paul Jones?
No, Catherine. In fact, it isn't possible. For the pilot is the only man who doesn't find it necessary to report to John Paul Jones.
The Pilot by James Fenimore Cooper is one of the best of America's novels brought to you each week by the NBC University of the Air. Next week, American Novels will present that famous tale of the Old West, The Luck of Roaring Camp by Bret Hart. We hope you'll be listening and that you'll pay a visit to your local public library very soon. You'll find there countless hours of entertainment for the asking. Many American novels in the 1947 summer series are included in the useful handbook of the world's great novels, which you may obtain by sending 25 cents to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. That's Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. The Pilot was adapted for radio by Bob Maley. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom, and the orchestra was directed by Bernard Berquist. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Catherine was played by Geraldine Kay, Cecilia by Doris Grundy, the pilot by Rupert LaBelle, Griffith by Larry Alexander, and Barnstable by Ken Nordine. Others were John Barkley, Don Gallagher, Sherman Marks, Charles Mountain, Arthur Peterson, and Duke Watson. This is John Conrad. This program came to you from Chicago and has been a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. Today is Air Force Day in recognition of the 40th anniversary of the Army Air Forces. We wish to honor the men living and dead who have served their country in the air and who are a constant reminder that air power is peace power. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.